Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Okay, the last thing we mentioned was that lakshana, figurative usage, can also be divided up another three ways, according to whether and what kind of suggestion it creates. It may create a vague suggestion, it may create no suggestion, or it may create a clear, obvious suggestion. So it's called guda vyangya, which results in a vague suggestion, or a not very hidden suggestion. Gata vyangya, there isn't any suggestion involved. And vyakta vyangya, clear, obvious suggestion is made. Gata vyangya is not taken seriously by poets. It's not of much use in poetry. Okay. Now, here's an example of vague suggestion. We didn't go over these yet, did we? Okay, a verse. Utkir nair iva chitritair iva navod binair ivo dyadvayaha kunde bibramitair iha smarakala shani nishatair iha iva magno magnataya lasair iva visham lavanya vapi jale keyam keli kalanidi subala me cheto haratyanga kaihi. Some theoreticians in poetry illustrate their explanations with choice poetry by various authors. But Kavi Karnapur is composing his own verses for his examples. They're all original verses. And this is one. Krishna is speaking to Subala. And I'll just translate it and then try to explain it. What's the noun here? I'm trying to find, there's a lot of adjectives here. What's the noun? Angakai. So the various bodily features. Instrumental plural. My mind is taken away. The last word in the verse is angakai. My mind is taken away. My heart is taken away by these bodily features. And then there's several adjectives. This is actually, although this is not the place to get into this, but there are what we call, you can call them figures of speech or poetic embellishments, alankars. And one of the alankars is called, what is it called? I can't remember the name of it. Sakuta. No, that's not that's the definition of it. Anyway, when you have a description with several very insightful, that means very, they have deep meaning, and there are several such adjectives used to describe something. A whole list of adjectives, and each adjective has a very, you know, very vivid meaning. That is called parikara. Parikara is the name of the figure of speech. And that's, we have an example, a strong example of that in this verse. There are a number of adjectives, and each of the adjectives is very significant. So, Krishna is telling Subala that my mind is being taken away by these bodily features, which are utkirnai, or iva. And there's also, almost every single adjective here has iva after it. So it's like making it, Iva marks a simile rather than a metaphor. Something is like something, and you have a word saying like. This face is like a moon. That's less radical than saying that the face is a moon. Then you're stretching reality, saying that the face is a moon. But you're still within the scope of ordinary reality when you say the face is like a moon. So similes are less radical. They distort reality less than metaphors. So the mark of a simile is a word that says like, similar to. And one of those words is Iva. And Iva is used here with each one of these adjectives. So each one of the adjectives is expressing a simile. Simile, it's like something else. Not exactly it, but like it. So these bodily limbs are like, as if, let's say as if, because we make it adverbial. As if utkirna. What does utkirna mean, do you think? One meaning of utkri, because kri means to scatter, so utkri can mean to scatter all over the place. Carve. Where did you get that? You looked it up? Yeah, it actually, proper, the meaning that makes sense in this context is carved. Just like in Karnataka, you can get nice wood and you can get nice woodwork. So in many homes, they have fancy door frames with nice carvings on them. So something's nicely carved. You can call it utkirna. It's artistically carved. So these limbs are as if they were artistically carved. And they're as if chitritaya, that means they're all different colors, not all the same color. Variety, they're of a variety of colors, as if. Nava udbinayar, they're like just newly sprouted. I'm not saying what these ideas suggest. We'll get into that later. I'm just literally translating first. They're as if newly brought into being. Udyadvaya, and just coming to the point of fresh youth. Udyadvaya, rising youth. Kunde vibramitayar iva. No, kunde belongs to the second line. No, it doesn't go together logically either. It's kunde. That's in your transliteration, which is wrong. In the book, it's on a separate line. Kunde starts. The second line starts with kunde. The meter dictates that. So, kunde vibramatire means that they're vibramata here means confused, confounded, that. One confuses them as if they were a kunda or jasmine flowers, jasmine petals. These limbs are easily confused for a jasmine or thought by mistake to be jasmine petals. And smara kala shane nishatayar. Nishata? Mama nishata sharaya vibidyamana tuchi vilasatkava chase to Krishna atma. Bhishma's prayer. Sharpened. It's actually condition. This is a causative, nishata. It's a causative past passive participle. That means they have been sharpened. Something or somebody sharpened them. Not that they're sharp, you know, by nature, but someone has taken them and made them sharper. And how do you make something sharper? Like a sword or a stone, how do you make it sharper? Rub it on what? You can rub it on your head, but that'll hurt. You have a grinding stone, which is called, one word for grinding stone is shana. Shana can mean hemp or linen cloth, but it also, another meaning of shana is whetstone or grinding stone. Like you use, not the grinding stone you use to make idlis, grinding stone you use to sharpen a knife. And whose grinding stone is it? Yeah, Cupid's grinding stone. Smara kala. Oh, the not just Cupid, the artistic skills of Cupid. So these limbs have been sharpened or made very sharp or just, you know, finely shaped, just exactly shaped, made very sharp on
the grinding stone of Cupid's arts. So he asks the question then, Kayam Kaili Kala Nidhi, O Subala, what is this feminine? But the actually, oh, Nidhi is supposed to be masculine. Is it also feminine? Okay, well, I guess he's feminine because he's referring to a female person. Why? But the gender is masculine. So why is it Iyam? That's feminine.
But Iyam is, Nidhi has a recession in the role of recession.
Oh, I see. So it's an apposition.
Yeah.
Who is this female person who is an ocean? Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. The real subject is a female person, therefore it's Iyam. Who is this female person who is like a reservoir or ocean of all the sporting arts, all the romantic arts? Okay, well, Krishna's... Okay, I skipped over it. Magno magnataya lasayariva. So these limbs are also as if they're moving very lazily or slowly because of being submerged and then brought out again from in the vapi, jale, the water of the, what's a vapi? Which I think is a well. Okay, vapi is a man-made lake? Okay, like a talab, a man-made lake. So it is a well. It's a well with steps. Okay. Which is a small man-made lake. I mean, it's for walking into. And then it's about, you don't walk right into the well. You just get close to it with the steps. And you actually go and swim in the well? Okay. Okay. But a man-made lake is just something bigger. It's the same kind of thing, but on a bigger scale. Yeah, that's... Okay, yeah. What does he say about Vapi?
He says, any pond...
Okay, it can be a pond.
Made by scattering or damming up earth. So, like, made by...
That's another meaning of Vapi. Well, that's our translation. Oh, he says that in Bhagavatam means pond. Okay, it can just be a pond also, as well as a special kind of well. Anyway, I think this is a figurative well, and we don't care about the dimensions of it here. Yeah, it's an abstract well. It doesn't actually exist anyway. So it doesn't matter how big it is. But those limbs have been repeatedly dipped in and taken back out of the well of lavanya, of charm. And because of being dipped like that in that well repeatedly and pulled out again, they're just like, I guess they're lazy or they're moving very slowly because they're dripping with water. Anyway, so the question is, what is this? Who is this? This ocean of all the romantic arts. Okay, now there's Guda Vyangya working here. Hidden suggestion. We have several figurative usages, like the limbs are not actually carved. Nobody took, this is Srimati Radharani being described, and nobody took her limbs and started hacking at them with a knife. They're not literally carved, but they're as if carved. They're metaphorically carved. They're so well formed that as if some sculptor had carved them, or some woodworker had very carefully carved them. That's metaphorical. That's a lakshana. Well, what's said here is that each of these figurative expressions, these figurative adjectives, none of these things are literally true.
You know, Cupid didn't come with a grinding stone and start grinding right around his limbs. It's just figurative. All of these adjectives are figurative. And each one of them creates a suggestion, but it's not a very obvious suggestion. It's sort of a vague, not very clear enough suggestion. For example, the adjective carved, utkirna, suggests that there's very excellent construction. They're built very excellently. Chitratire, that means of various colors, like the hands and the leg and the feet and the eyes and the eyebrows all have their different colors. I guess that's what's suggested. What's suggested here is just the idea that this is the different colors of the different limbs of Srimati Radharani. Her hands are one color, her eyes are a different color, like that. And it creates there's a vivid variegation of color because of that. But that's the suggestion. It's not said, but that's suggested. Otherwise, you might think that the limbs are just made out of rainbow colors. But it's not like that, that each of the limbs is all the colors, but that the individual limbs are each different colors. That's a suggestion. By saying that they're as if just newly sprouted, that suggests that the limbs are very tender, very soft. And to say that, it is Udyadvaya Kunda. It is according to, Udyadvaya goes with Kunda. They're like a freshly blossomed jasmine flower, which suggests that suvalitatvam, that they're just perfectly constructed, just perfect proportions, like a perfect flower. And the adjective that sharpened on the grinding stone of Cupid's arts so the limbs are very sharp because they've been sharpened on that grinding stone. Therefore, they have the power to shatter the mind. Okay, they can cut right through Krishna's heart. And the description of being submersed in that well or lake of charm suggests that those limbs are extremely charming. So, in Kavi Karnapur's opinion, all of these suggestions are not obvious. They're aspashta. Now that, he doesn't say it, but that would mark this as less than excellent poetry, because the suggestions aren't clear enough. They're not clear enough for the readers. Now here's an example of aguda, Vyangya, where the suggestions are obvious enough. But this example is in Prakrit, in Sharasani Prakrit, spoken by a gopi. Lila vilasa mahui ma gorima ahira akumari anam konhanura aguruna Vi-a-dong-ba o poda-ido jyoti. That's Sharasani Prakrit, and there's always a Sanskrit Sanskrit gloss of that given, Sanskrit version of it. In Sanskrit, it can be read, Lila-vilasa madurima gorima abira-kumari-ka-anam Krishna-nuraga-goruna Vidagdabhavam patito jyotiti. Which do you like better, the Sanskrit or the Prakrit? Well, Vishwanath Chakravarti is providing the Sanskrit here. Sometimes Kavi Karnapur himself gives it. But here Vishwanath is giving it in the commentary. Anyway, Prakrit
in the hands of the poets, has its own kind of poetry. It's a softer language. Now, what the verse says is that Krishna Kanhanura, Kanuraga, Kanhanura means Krishna Anuraga, the gopis' attraction to Krishna. Garuna, Krishna Anuraga, Guruna. So that's their guru. The gopis' guru is their attraction to Krishna. And it's teaching, it has taught them all the romantic arts. They've learned it all from Krishna's, from their attraction to Krishna. And then there's some other words here. Jatiti, immediately, you know, automatically, without, you know, any other process of education. Just their being attracted to Krishna has taught them how to act like gopis. Lila vilasa mahuma gorima. The excellence of their charming, sportful playing. And then ahira akumari anam. Of the abira kumaris, the excellence of the excellent competence in romantic sporting that the young unmarried girls of the abiras have learned, they've learned it from their guru, which is Krishna's, their attraction to Krishna. That's the statement. And there, okay, what is the suggestion? Okay, what it says here that is suggested is that they didn't have to go to school to learn how to be charming gopis. They learned it all without any effort, very quickly, just by their being attracted to Krishna. And that suggestion is clear enough. It's not at all vague. He doesn't give an example, I don't think. Yeah, does not give an example of Lakshana that doesn't create any suggestion, because that's not even proper poetry. That's not even bad poetry. If there's no Vyanjana, then there's no life. It's not poetry. Okay, well, we're talking about Vyanjana. We haven't defined it. What is Vyanjana? We haven't given a proper definition yet. What is suggestion? So now for time for the definition of Vyanjana. And then we'll be discussing Vyanjana for the rest of this chapter and the next. This is a very essential topic in understanding of poetry. Abhida lakshanakshepa tatparyanam samaptitaha vyaparo dvaninadirya shabdasya vyanjana tusa. This is what Vyanjana or suggestion is. And it's suggestion by what? The suggestion made by words. Is Vyanjana some sort of kridanta? Because it looks like the shabdasya is actually the subject here. It's the suggestion made by words. Is what the sense I get out of it. Anyway, it's the Vyanjana, the suggestion that belongs to words, maybe. Like, you know, I'm trying to talk to somebody, and the little boy comes and interrupts, and so I slap him in the face. Now I'm suggesting to him, don't interrupt, please, by slapping him in the face. That's one way. You can make suggestions in various ways, by you know, making a gesture or throwing something at somebody, or hitting him in the face, or making a sign. But we're talking about suggestions made by words, okay. Poetic suggestion is not made by slapping people. It's not a slapstick comedy. Suggestions in poetry are made by the words, by the power of Vyanjana.
So vyanjana pertains to the suggestions made by words.
Words, not only words, actually it's whole statements can make a suggestion. Even a whole story can make a particular suggestion. Or even a part of a word can make a suggestion. But typically, we look first of all at what kind of suggestions each of the words make, or particular words make. And it's not that in any verse, every single word will make a suggestion. That's overloading, and you won't never find it. You're lucky if you find a few good suggestions in one verse. Even one suggestion is enough. But if you have a few, don't expect that every single word in the verse is going to make a powerful suggestion. It's not normally happening. And if it did, it would be just overload. It would just be mind-boggling. But we're looking at how some of the words in a sentence are making suggestions. And so what is that vyanjana? Samaptitaha. That's the tas suffix. We can take it to mean after. After the completion of the abhida, lakshana, akshepa, and tatparya. Well, these are the shabda vrittis. We're counting four of them here. We were only talking about two, abhida and lakshana. We had some mention of tatparya and akshepa. Akshepa was just logical inference, which we didn't count as a separate function of the meaning of words or mode of meaning, because it's just really a special function of abhida or literal meaning. When we decided that when I say tie up cow, in Sanskrit there's no articles. It doesn't say a cow, the cow. There is no word a. Tie up cow. Or a cow should be tied up. Literally, that refers to the jati of cowness. But you can't tie up cowness. You have to get a particular cow and tie up the cow. And by tying up the cow, you're tying up cowness. By logical presumption, you have to assume that you're talking about a particular cow when you're talking about tying it up. But that's not considered lakshana. It's just a special extended use of literal meaning with the help of some logic. So we consider that, we don't consider akshepa a separate vritti. It's not lakshana, and neither of it is really a separate vritti. It's just a special extension of abhida, mukhya vritti, literal meaning. But here, in this karaka, he's listing it separately. When there is the completion of literal meaning, of figurative meaning, of logical extension, and of tatparya. And what is tatparya? We already said something about that.
Explanation?
No, not technically. What is it? Well, yeah, the purport. Now, what's a purport? We just know Prabhupada's purports. Prabhupada's commentaries are called purports. But what, if you, look in the English dictionary and find out what a purport is. Which? No, maybe, but I think the meaning is the author's intention, or what's called in Sanskrit abhipraya. What the author meant to say. That makes a difference. You can say the same words with different intentions, and you somehow or other you should understand what the author meant. If the speaker is happy with you and says you did an excellent job, then you understand that he means to say to praise you. But if that same speaker is fuming, and you know he's angry at you, and he says you did a very excellent job, then you have to construe that what he means is something different, just the opposite. So you have to, by different contexts, by the context and signs, you have to try to ascertain what is the author really meaning to say. That's the tatparya, purport. Well, What's the difference between tatpari and vyanjana? Tatpari is the idea the speaker had in mind when he said something. That could be anything. It doesn't have to be a subtle suggestion. A vyanjana is something different. I don't see how they're the same thing. The tatpari can be suggested, but purport is not the same thing as suggestion. A purport may be suggested, like there is a suggestion involved when I mean the opposite of what I say. I'm happy. I say I'm happy with you when I'm really angry with you. That there is a suggestion there, but what I had to say, what I had in mind, is being suggested. But the act of having something in mind is not the same as the act of suggesting. So tatpari is something different than vyanjana. Tatpari applies to sentences. You don't talk about the tatpari of a single word. Words have dictionary meanings, and sometimes they have figurative meanings. And maybe even suggestions are made by words. But a tatparya is what the author meant by a whole statement, not by individual words. An author has an idea in mind, he puts it together, uses words, but what he's creating is a sentence to convey his meaning. And so purports belong to sentences or to collections of many sentences. They don't belong to individual words. Whereas vyanjana can belong to an individual word. Now, I didn't finish the definition. When these functions of meaning are finished, these modes of meaning are finished, literal meaning, figurative meaning, logical presumption, and figuring out the purport, what the author meant to say, when all those functions are finished, there's a further function of words, which is like an echo. Dhwani means echo. You know, it's the one sound creates another sound. It bounces off the wall of the cave and comes back as another sound. I say, hello, and then the wall says, hello, back to me. Those are two different sounds. It's an echo. So one idea echoes as another idea. That's called dhwani, suggestion. And it's something, by definition, it's a special function of echoing of an idea that occurs after all the other kinds of meaning are exhausted. They've all done their job and they're silent. The figurative meaning, the literal meaning, the figurative meaning, the logical presumption, and the intention of the author, they've all done their job, but there still might be an echo going on. That's dhwani, or vyanjana is another name of it. The subtle suggestion after all the other functions of meaning have finished themselves. Now, let's give example. In the phrase Gangayam Gosha, cowherd village on the Ganga, first of all, the word Ganga has to have a literal meaning, right? It's the name of a particular river. Actually, in Thai language, Ganga means any river. Ganga means is the name of any river. It's a word for river. But in Sanskrit, Ganga is a particular river. It's a proper name. That's a literal meaning. Now, that has to be there. That Abhida Vritti has to be expressed. Otherwise, you can't have a sentence. What is a sentence? A sentence is a combination of words that have they have mutual expectancy. Like you have a subject that wants a verb, and a verb that wants a subject, and a noun that needs a modifier to be more specific. Words have expectancy or need for each other in syntax, anvaya. And then also suitability. There has to be logical coherence or compatibility. I don't say I moistened him with fire, or I
I burned him with water. These are incompatible combinations of ideas. So that's called yogyata. And asakti, the words have to be in some reasonable proximity. It's not that I say bring and then 3 days later say the cow. That's not a sentence because the words are too separated in time. That's a sentence. If I use the word Ganga, but it doesn't have a literal meaning, or I can't grasp the literal meaning. Suppose I don't know Sanskrit and I never heard of the Ganga. I hear the word, but it doesn't mean anything to me. It has no literal meaning for me. Then there's no question, okay, I don't know the language, but I can make poetry out of it. You know, I can figure out, I can imagine figurative meanings. It doesn't work like that. You have to first of all grasp the literal meaning of a word. Then you can consider its syntactic role in the sentence. And when the literal meaning creates a problem, the sentence doesn't fit together. It doesn't make sense logically or grammatically, it's wrong. That means there's a blockage. There's an impossibility of the literal meaning. But you can only know that there's an impossible meaning of the literal meaning if you know the literal meaning. If there is a literal meaning and you know it. Otherwise, you can't proceed to figurative meaning unless you first of all have a literal meaning. Because it's dependent on the incongruity of the literal idea. It doesn't fit. But it doesn't fit in the sentence. You have to be able to put the syntax together. There has to be a syntax. And to have a syntax or organization of words into a sentence, you have to know what each word means. The words have to have meaning to make a sentence. And there has to be a combination, according to certain rules, of the meanings of the individual words. So without proper literal meaning, you can't have figurative meaning. And when the literal meaning just can't go far enough to produce reasonable, sensible meaning of the sentence, then it gives up, and then you resort. When there's blockage of the literal meaning, then you can resort to figurative meaning. The village can't literally be sitting on top of the water. There must be some figurative meaning, like it's sitting on the shore that's next to the river. Now, then the lakshana does its job. It creates a reference to the shore of the river. And that's it. The lakshana is finished. It doesn't have any. It uses up its power and can't do anything else. But then the third, or rather, according to this count, the fifth mode. Actually, we don't count akshepa. We sometimes count tatparya as a separate vritti. Then you have three, four vrittis, including vyanjana. So the last vritti comes into action, begins to act when everything else has used up. In the case of Gangayam Gosha, you have a literal meaning and you have a figurative meaning, which is the shore of the river. When that's finished, then Vyanjana power can take over and give you the idea of the coolness and the sanctity of that village. And that's the prayojana, or the intended suggestion. That is dwani. Remember before we said that some lakshanas don't create any suggestion and some do. In fact, rudha lakshanas, lakshanas that are just conventional, like Yudhishthira is the name. It means steady in battle, but we take it to refer to a certain person. Or Vishwaksena is literally a name of Lord Narayan, but figuratively it's a name of the general of his army, of Narayan's army. That's lakshana, but it's just rudha lakshana. It doesn't create any suggestion to call the associate of Narayan Vishwaksena. It doesn't evoke any echo or any suggestion. So some lakshanas are just rudha and don't create any suggestion, but some do create suggestion.
Now, on that, on the basis of that fact, there may be a counter argument that since there are special kinds of lakshanas that can create suggestions, what do you need a separate energy for called vyanjana? Why don't we just say that the savyangya lakshana itself, by its own power, makes the suggestion? You don't need a separate category called dvani or dvanjana. That's the Purvapaksha. What's the answer to that? Well, Mamata, in his Kavya Prakash, second chapter, argues against that idea. He says, when there's an figurative idea that has the power to further create a suggestion, it's not that the figurative idea is, after expressing itself, then goes on to express another figurative idea on top of that. That power isn't there. An act of perception or an act of awareness has its object, its vishaya. Like, I'm aware of the big bull that's racing toward me with his horns. That's an awareness. The vishaya of it is that bull. But there's also something called the palam, the consequence of that awareness. The consequence of that awareness is that I'm terrified and I'm figuring out how I can get out of there, get away from there. So my terror and desire to flee is the palam of my awareness of the bull. They're not the same thing. The immediate awareness is one thing, and the consequence of it, the fruit of it, is another. So when you have a vyanjana, or rather a lakshana that creates a vyanjana, a figurative usage that leads to a suggested idea, like the shore of the Ganga, referring to the shore figuratively, suggests that the shore, like the river, is very sacred, and that the atmosphere on the shore is cool. That's the figurative idea. I mean, I'm sorry, that's the suggestion created by the figurative idea. But that suggested idea, is something different. The idea of the shore is one thing, and the fruit of that idea, the suggestion that it's, that the shore is sacred and cool, is different. The figurative energy, the lakshana of vritti, has the power to refer the word Ganga, to make it refer to Tira, sure. But it doesn't have any more power after that. It's used up. It doesn't have the power to create the suggestion also. You need a different energy to create a whole different idea. That's Mamata's argument. And even more ancient authorities have said, Shabda buddhi karmanam viramya vyapara abhava. When the ideas created by words and the activities that are inspired by words are finished, they don't have any more power to act. Words use up their energy by expressing ideas and maybe inspiring people to do something, but that's it. That is the full extent of the power of the word. The word can't, that level of meaning can't do anything more after that. So Abhida, Lakshana are used up. There is a need, and Tatparya also can't be explained as, okay, that Purvapaksha is defeated. Lakshana can't on its own create the suggestion. It's already used up just by creating the figurative idea of the shore. So another proposal is made by the Purvapaksha that, so let Tatparya be the power that creates suggestion. Let the author's intent be the energy behind suggestion. What do we need another energy called Vyanjana? The problem is with that,
that tatparya only belongs to whole sentences. Individual words and parts of words don't have tatparya. Someone who speaks uses words, but his own idea is conveyed by the whole sentence. So tatparya can't be the power behind suggestion, because we have suggestion created by words, and tatparya is not present in words. So we're left, having defeated those two purvapakshas, we're left with the conclusion that we do have to accept a separate power of meaning called vyanjana, or suggestion. And here Kavi Karnapur counts it as number four. Counting abhida, or literal meaning, is number one. Lakshana, figurative meaning, is number two. And then also counting tatparya as the third, author's intention. Then the fourth mode of meaning is vyanjana. Okay, that's as far as I've prepared. There's also an example here. I can read the example. Another Prakrit verse. This is a good example of how vyanjana works to express a suggestion. Bani o vala a aina aja sutta mahupurim ganta iha bani am ajatra pia I ba'u suvana pado eina. Anybody without looking at the Sanskrit knows what that means? I'll read the Sanskrit. Kavi Karnapur gives the Sanskrit. Banito valabhapatina adyasuto madhupurim ganta. Ganta is a mistake. It's ganta. Iti banitam aryaya pibati vadu shravana puttakena. Okay. The vadu, young girl, has been told by the elder lady. Vishwanath Chakravarti tells us this elder lady is Jatila. She's talking to one of the gopis. And telling her that it's been said, Banito, by the king of the cowherds, Nanda Maharaj, that today my son has to go to Mathura. Nanda Maharaj has ordered my son, in other words, Abhimanyu, Radharani's husband, has been told by Nanda Maharaj to go to Mathura on business. Having heard that from Jatila, the young gopi drinks it up with the cups in the cups of her ears. She swallows it up very eagerly. But this is a figurative usage. The ears are not generally used as literally as cups for drinking. Try it. The ear, unless you've punctured it, it doesn't let the liquid out. It won't get in. It won't even get into your throat if you pour it into your ear. It doesn't literally make sense drinking in your ear. But this is figurative. We have to understand that figuratively means hearing it very eagerly, with great eager anticipation. You're just drinking it up. That's figurative, lakshana. So what's suggested by that? Why? But there's actually a part of the story that's suggested. Yeah. Because it's very happy news to her that Abhimanyu is not going to be at home, and then Krishna is free to come. So that's why that's suggested. She's very happy that house is going to be empty, no problem. Krishna can come and meet Radharani. That's what's suggested. That little part of the story. So here it is a case of the lakshana, or the figurative. If I just said she heard it,
then that wouldn't suggest anything. But when I say she drank it up with her ears, with the cups of her ears, that means she heard it very eagerly. And that suggests that what she's eager about is that the house is going to be empty. So the lakshana here is creating vyanjana. But don't get it wrong. It's not that lakshana, it's always lakshana that has to create vyanjana. Vyanjana can be created directly by direct meaning. Abhida can also, the abhida meaning can immediately create a vyanjana. And vyanjana can create another vyanjana. We saw that in the definition of uttama, uttama, super excellent poetry, is poetry in which the suggestions create further suggestions. So suggestion can be created by any mode of meaning. But we're giving examples of lakshana creating vyanjana or leading to vyanjana. And that's as far as I can go because after that it's a difficult passage and I'm not ready, I'm not prepared for it yet. Any questions? Yes.
Because in the comparison there is both Shravana Putakena, the cups of ear is mentioned, it is an example of Saropa Prayojanavati, Shuddha Saropa Prayojanavati Vanchana, is it?
Shuddha, let's see, is it Shuddha or is it Gauna?
What's the relationship? I think it's not Shuddha, I think it's Gauna. Because
the ears
are like cups. Well, okay, the word cups, you know, just looking at that's gauna. The ears are not cups, they're like cups. It's not that the ears are part of a cup or something connected to a cup. No, ears have nothing to do with cups, but they're similar to cups. That's gauna. Drinking with ears, the verb pipati, that word... Also, it's a similarity. You know, drinking and hearing are two completely different actions, although they both involve bringing something into the body. But in this case, also, it's gauna. The hearing, this kind of eager hearing is like drinking. It's like
it's a normal simile.
It's a gauna.
Okay, simile.
Using both words is gauna for both words. Pipati and also puttakena.
Is it upama or simile or metaphor? Because there is no word called eva or like that.
It is... Calling the ear a cup is a metaphor because it's saying it's a cup. It's not saying it's like a cup. And it's saying that she's drinking. It's not saying that she's hearing, but her hearing is like drinking. So it's metaphor. It's direct metaphor. The hearing is turned into drinking and the ear is turned into a cup. So that it's metaphor, but it's lakshana. It's gauna lakshana.
Sarupa
prayojana. It's gauna lakshana, but it does have a prayojana. It does create a powerful suggestion.
It's sarupa because both objects are mentioned. Only in sarupa.
No, because what does it say? Shravana puttakena?
Yeah.
Okay, so the ear and the cup are there.
Yeah.
But the other word, the hearing is not there.
So that is sadhyavasana.
That's sadhyavasana because we're talking about drinking. We're not talking about hearing. So the hearing is missing. That's sadhyavasana.
So two metaphors there, one for drinking, hearing, and
Well, it's a double metaphor, yeah. We have a metaphor of drinking that's really hearing, and ears that are really cups. Those are two separate metaphors, but they fit together. They're both part of the same story. You know, you can describe somebody, you're describing the same person or thing, but you can apply several metaphors to it. Your hearing is like drinking, and your ears are like cups. Two different metaphors. Or your ears are cups, and your hearing is drinking. Okay, anything else? All right, yeah? Microphone?
Just to ask about this tatparya, separating dvani from tatparya.
That tatparya can't do all the work of dvani.
Yeah.
It can't serve the purpose of dvani.
Yeah. Because, for example, in Gangayam Ghoshaha, It's a part of the, if we take tatparya to mean intention of the speaker, then isn't it that he is intending the person to understand that there is coolness because on the...
Yes, the intention is there, but just his intention doesn't express it. You have to take help of Vyanjana to let the reader know what the intention is, to convey the intention. The intention is there by its own strength, but it doesn't express itself without Vyanjana. Now, we don't... The Vyanjana helps the reader understand what the Tatparya was. So the Tatparya by itself doesn't reveal itself. It just stays hidden in the mind of the speaker. Normally we tell Tatparya from context, and that would be akshepa, by logical inference. But sometimes the Tatparya is so unobvious that it can't be told from context. You need Vyanjana to tell you what the Tatparya is, what the author meant to say. So anyway, the argument is that we can't dispense with the separate energy Vyanjana. It has to be there to create suggestions. Okay? Okay. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Kavi Karnapur Ki Jai.